Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hut in the Clock. Noon on a Wednesday. It is Jonathan Hut in the Clock. Caroline Willie DeMays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow, joins us now. Hutton, our favorite time of the week when you come and join us. Rough one in London for the Tennessee Titans. And we had a lot of callers and texters throughout the entire week say, bench Tannehill, we're done with Tannehill. They were enraged when Mike Vrabel said, if Tannehill's healthy enough to go, he's going to be our starter. What do you think the Titans need to do at the quarterback position?
Well, if he's healthy enough to go, they should go with him. He's the best quarterback on the roster. To this point, Will Levis hasn't been able to beat out Malik Willis, and that's telling, considering what we saw from Malik Willis. And that's with me also adding in, Willis looked pretty good in the preseason, but this offense in Tannehill, he's got to be the leader of that quarterback spot. And as long as he can go, yeah, he's the guy. If not, I mean, there's a lot of discussion about what happens over the bye week here and whether or not we'll see Levis coming out against Atlanta. I don't know about you guys. I have a suspicion, and there's – I think we're trending towards seeing both guys in Atlanta, against Atlanta. I don't know if that's the best option or not.
Like both Willis and Levis?
Yeah, I do. I'm just saying that because we haven't seen – Will Levis yet, and Malik Willis gives them an option in the run game in a different area that they can play with the scheme that we saw. Again, I'm not saying it's a great option. Do they have the jump with the backup option? I mean, I think if Tannehill goes, by the way, I think at minimum Will Levis should be the backup quarterback for that game, but. I think we're trending more and more towards seeing both. And it's either just going to be because simply Willis isn't cutting it, or they're going to have something in the game plan for the backup QB, which would be Levis in my scenario.
And I'm with you that if Tannehill can't go, I'd like to at least see Levis get an opportunity. But what concerns me is the fact that Levis hasn't won the backup job yet.
Yeah. And, well, I mean – he was injured during camp, and by this point, you would like to see him make that move, right? Malik Willis has been sacked on 17.5% of his career dropbacks. That's the second highest rate for any quarterback with 50 or more pass attempts in the last 30 seasons. And it was Luke Falk, by the way, who's higher. At minimum, he's got – I think you elevate Levis just for the sheer – point of it seems like he's the guy moving forward, not Willis as the starter next season, if we're just projecting here. But he's been third string all season, getting no reps, getting no opportunities in meeting rooms to have responsibilities. I mean, he's got responsibilities, but not like the backup would have. It's like a redshirt quarterback, except the draft capital points to a massive mess. And if he doesn't play in 13 days or what, moving on now, 11 days, what was the point in not in training up to grab him for the second consecutive year they've drafted a QB? And at this point, guys, I think we know Malik Willis is a backup quarterback at best in the National Football League.
At best.
They may have a potential starter in Levis. I would make that move. I don't know. It's just a suspicion that I think we'll see both guys. And that's just to see what both would have within a game plan that they would try to mix and match. I don't agree with it. It's just a bet that I would make. It's like betting on the draw in soccer.
Now, Hutt, with that being said, it'd be because the fans are, and I get it, you know, the fans, they see what's going on in AFC South, and they see these three quarterbacks, and, you know, they see the three teams, Houston, Indianapolis and Jacksonville, and they see that, okay, they found their quarterbacks, whether we can debate whether they're franchise quarterbacks or not. But the fans are looking at it as, if, okay, those three teams got their quarterback of the future. The Titans are sitting here basically in purgatory. They know that Malik Willis, at least from the fans' perspective, isn't the future. They know Tannehill, this is his last season, and they're wondering about Will Levis. Is he the guy? So I think fans are now like, listen, this roster's not good enough to make a true push for a playoffs. Let's see what this young guy can do. Because ultimately, if you don't see what he can do this season, then you're praying and hoping next season when you finally do get an opportunity for him to play and show that he's worth what you thought he was worth and that he's going to be your future quarterback. Because if he's not, the fans are going to be even more pissed at you because they're going to say you had an opportunity to put him in a season that you know was lost so we can see what we had, but you didn't, and now we've lost out on the quarterbacks of this draft.
Well, and let's take it a step further, because even if, and it's not even if, within that building, Vrabel is focused on 2023.
Exactly.
And at two and four, even if outside the building, we would say, you know what, there's a path to the playoffs here. I know that Vrabel's preaching that within his circle at St. Thomas Sports
Park.
And he should. There's a number of teams that have three wins. The Titans have two. And you've certainly got right in front of you in the AFC South, two teams there. But also, I mean, the Jets right now are 3-3. You know, they're thinking playoff. The thing is, though, Mace, and I don't disagree with you on the mentality of the fans or the fact that you're looking at a season that doesn't seem to be getting much better down the path here. This is where I think there's a bit of just an uncertainty. The feeling going into this season was, okay, there are certain areas where the offensive line has to hold up, the quarterback play, can they keep him healthy? Tannehill, I'm talking about, and you kind of knew with his ankle and the changes weren't going to be great early on. They've reached this point now. But the feeling I have of where this is all headed is pretty evident, given how this team is playing. They're not playing like the other group of teams that have started slow but have that QB that is getting healthier or have the identity that they've been running with. They just haven't been winning ball games. Whether Tannehill is healthy or not, or to me, it doesn't really matter. I'm not saying it happens now if Tannehill is capable of playing. But at 2-4, the season is capable of being lost in a very short stretch, right when they return from the bye week. The vibe is different with this team. It just seems like a bunch of dudes that are just keeping their head down. It doesn't feel like the tight-knit groups from the past. And that's where I think we really measure Vrabel's message moving forward, because the veterans, not just Tannehill, but Henry, Byard, Simmons, there's a group of them. They've always kept the tenor in the locker room, straightforward, ignore the noise, find a way, make a play. Even when they were struggling, it's been really tight-knit. And I'm sure a big part of my feeling on just kind of the vibe of purgatory is all the roster turnover. But the smart players know that there's another big roster turnover coming this offseason, too. It's going to be a hell of a rebuild. It'll be interesting to see how patient Amy Adams Strunk is with all of that. And also, I'm intrigued, just a non-sequitur here, I'm intrigued by the mentality of Tannehill. Because last year, he pushed through the ankle injury until he absolutely had to have the surgery in order to get back in case he could within a short time frame. I have no idea the severity, but that toughness and grit that he showed last season with how he stuck with it, trying to give everything he had, I'll never question his team first mentality. What that was last season, prior to ownership waving the white flag in early December and firing Robinson, and then starting that rebuild that they refused to fully embrace. And a year later, what happens with this injury now? With some players, in situations like this, where guys know that they're not a part of the plan past this season, some will opt to go ahead and have a surgery sooner rather than later, instead of waiting for the offseason, knowing that their health and their mentality going into the offseason for how teams are going to judge them, GMs are going to judge them, coaches, will help them land a better gig with a possible better payday. And if you're – when injuries are on the fringe of opting for procedure, contracts, relationships, and future outlooks all play a factor in the player's decision. It's something they'll never admit behind a podium, but you'll hear about behind the scenes. And that's got to be something that's crossing the mind of not just Tannehill, but others looking forward to I mean, a run that kind of feels like eventually we're going to see the rookie quarterback. And that points to kind of the same mentality that we've seen from moves of last year. If they make it early in the season, you can get on a run. They went to VY his rookie year, and they went on a run. And things looked up on the up and up as you move forward. They need that from Levis to kind of propel them into next year. Tannehill knows he's not that guy, and I think we all know Willis is not that guy.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like, you know, Malik is that guy, at least not a starter. And we don't know if Will Levis is that guy at all. But Carolina asked, you know, Vrabel a question about the offensive line in regards to, you know,
this offensive line.
Yeah. And his answer.
Yep.
What did you think of his answer? In particular, the part where he says, we don't want to get into a drop back game. How did you understand that to be? Because I tell you how I understood it to be after you tell me how you understood it to be. When a coach says, after being asked that question, he says, we don't want to get into a drop back game.
You know what I thought? I'm sorry. Did you oversee the game plan that we rolled out in week one? That's what I would be asking if I'm inside the building. They ignored the run game in the second half of week one against the New Orleans Saints. That was a drop back pass game. They don't want to get a drop back pass game, but he preaches, you know, playing smart, ignoring the penalties, not ignoring them, trying to ignore the noise and focus and not have the big penalty. That's all they do. They're getting into a drop back pass game, not because the offensive line is blocking so well for the run game. They're getting into there because of mental errors and not correcting those types of mistakes that have been preached post game after post game. I mean, this group seems different. You know, they went with some backup guys. And by the way, they gave money to John Robinson guys this offseason on the offensive line who were backups. So, this is their own doing. If they want to ignore or try to get rid of the drop back pass game, it was inevitable given the situation here with the offense. And I mean, they brought it on in week one. It's like that was their game plan.
Exactly.
So I don't know if he's trying to get he wants to get down into third and run or pass, third and manageable. And that's what they haven't been able to do. They've been very good on first down and awful on third down.
Well, I you're right, and I sort of look at that from the standpoint of, and I told Carolyn this because we were discussing it before you came on. When you answer a question in that manner, when you say, "Well, we don't want to get into a drop back game," is it
that's
the NFL, right?
So you can't do 50% of what the line needs to do.
Exactly. So what you're saying is, in essence, our line isn't good enough, but. And you didn't say that, but you did say that. And then you did say, well, our offensive line is not that bad. We're good, in a sense. You can't say
we're pass protect.
Yeah, you can't say you're good, but then say, well, we don't want to get into a drop back game. Are you saying you don't want to throw the ball 30, 40 times a game? I agree with you. I don't want you to throw the ball 30 or 40 times a game. But a drop back to me means I should be able to have the ability when I want to drop back five steps. Nobody's really doing seven-step drops no more unless they play action. I should be able to get into a three-step or a five-step drop game. I should be good enough to do that. But you're saying we're not, but we are. You're contradicting yourself in the same answer.
Well, and the identity has been the run game. Uh-huh. But I can't help but think they've made Derrick Henry more or less. He's not the backup, but he's splitting reps as a starter now. And on the O-line, if they're great at running the ball, let's see it. You know, get after it. And some of their best runs have been called back for penalties. But yeah, Mace, you're right. And you know, what they're trying to avoid is where the defense pins back the ears and gets after the quarterback.
And that's what every team wants to avoid.
What I saw them bring in this offseason just wasn't cutting it. And there were a lot of questions. And we didn't see much in the preseason. And here we are. They also don't have a great receiving core. They're ignoring the fact that they've got two backs that should be the engine to the offense. And meanwhile, they're setting up third and longs. And that is a recipe for disaster with this offense.
And that's what is so crazy to me, is I'll see Tim Kelly design and dial up great plays that sometimes just aren't executed very well. But then I see him, you know, give Derrick Henry the ball 12 times against the Ravens, abandon the run in the second half. Derrick Henry's on the sideline when it's third and one in the red zone and Malik Willis isn't at quarterback. I just, there are some things that seem great and obvious and really, really smart that Tim Kelly does. And then there are things that are obvious that he doesn't do. And I'm like thinking, what are you doing? Are you trying to win this football game?
Well, and some of it is they're only getting a certain number of carries because of the number of snaps. Mace mentioned they don't want to get into a 30 or 40 pass game. They're lucky to get to 40 plays. No team runs fewer plays per game than the Tennessee Titans. The clock runs a lot in Titans games, and the offense just doesn't keep the ball enough. And as a result, they don't score either due to lack of chances or the inability to actually put it through the end zone past the goal line. They run 16 fewer plays per game than the best offense in the National Football League. They're 26th in scoring. They're averaging 17 points per game. And they've got really one receiver because Treylon Burks, from what I'm told, is slow to get back. And that's frustrating for some behind the scenes. They need him back after the bye week to at least give them another option instead of Hopkins.
How much of the Titans' issues right now, whether it's play calling, personnel, so on and so forth, coaching overall, how much of that is due to Vrabel? Like, how much of the Titans' situation that they're in right now, 2-4, tough questions that they're going to have to answer at the trade deadline, how much of that is on Mike Vrabel's shoulders?
Well, I mean, technically it starts and ends with him because he's the head coach, right? And he oversees the game plans. Yeah, exactly. He oversees the game plans. And look, it's also past awful acquisitions that are coming back to bite them with this roster, but they had options this offseason. They spent money on Dillard, who is, you know, a backup now, and they spent money on a backup who's now a backup. That's my point. They've got a backup at center who now, he's trying to level up at center moving forward, backup at guard, rookie at guard, and a piecemealing together right tackle because of a stupid suspension from the NFL with Nicholas Petit-Frere, who wasn't great last Sunday either. But this is more than just overseeing a game plan. I mean, this is in many cases just mental errors and awful play. I mean, it's just they're not executing. Players aren't good enough. And you've got Tannehill averaging under 161 yards per game passing on the road. And he's taken 11 sacks on the road. I'm counting London as a road game as well. And it took 10 quarters, by the way, to score an offensive touchdown on the road, 14 quarters to score a second touchdown. And in 16 quarters on the road, they have zero passing touchdowns. They knew their wide receiver needed to be upgraded. They knew they needed more speed. Vrabel mentioned all of that. And instead, they passed on options in order – they drafted a running back to be a boost to the passing game. And, I mean, again, it's options that they had. They're taking flyers. You know, they're playing the board as you – other teams play the board, and they play the board based on positions that will really help them going into the season. And – I think the veterans on the roster are looking around going, man, we need help here. It starts with them. Simmons is pointing to guys that want to be there. Simmons is voicing frustration. I'm sure he's frustrated with his own play, just like Byard would be doing that, Henry, others. The top paid guys have to come through for Vrabel, and that's not happening right now.
Quickly, Hutton, what did you make of Jeffrey Simmons' comments in the locker room?
I think it's a combination of things. I take it seriously, by the way. I mean, I start there, and I think that's a signal of just the overall air and just kind of the temper of the locker room, even the off season. Like, are we going after Hopkins? Are we in a rebuild mode? Are we drafting two quarterbacks in back-to-back drafts to replace Tannehill? Is he going to be traded? Is Henry going to be traded? Look, yeah, there were a lot of questions with all of that. Uncertainty. Byard, you know, was a big saga too. Simmons gets paid, and it just pointing to him, he would admit this too. He's got to be a game wrecker. If the defensive front is not a storyline in the game recap, the Titans aren't winning that game. I don't even need to see the score. I can tell you the Titans aren't winning that game. It's either defensive front is dominant or they're not, and then they're in the game. They're getting the ball back. They're disruptive. They're not getting the ball back to the offense when it actually is truly needed in a critical situation for the most part. And they're giving up some awful penalties too that are bailing out the opposition. But I'm sure there are players that have voiced frustration or are acting like it behind the scenes. And Simmons is actually voicing it out of frustration after another loss. And it, according to, I believe, Marlon Humphrey, Simmons got into a fight with Odell Beckham Jr. after the game. You waited on Odell on the field, and these comments would come after all that took place. Mm. So, it was a mess.
Well,
it's a mess.
Hutt, I saw the play, and we discussed it yesterday, and we can discuss this further some other time because we know we got to get you out of here.
Okay.
But that was a dirty play by Simmons. A dirty play, and I hated seeing it because he went at that young man's legs, and while two people already had him, and they were going to blow the whistle, but he deliberately, you can see it, he deliberately looked at him and went straight at his legs. You're 300 pounds, dude, and we're all here. This game is a physical game already, and we're all here to protect one another within reason. I understand that. But you don't go after a guy when he's sitting in a vulnerable position like that and you outweigh him by over 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. To me, it was inexcusable. I understand why Odell said something to him. Some people say he need him. I don't know if he need him or not. But, hell, I would have need him, too, if he would have went at one of my guys like that. And then Simmons, on top of that, gets the penalty. So there's a lot of frustration going around, it seems, that locker room. And it's not just Jeffrey Simmons.
Again, Simmons, according to Humphrey, Simmons is – while they're walking off the field after swapping jerseys, Humphreys I'm talking about, Simmons has his helmet on, just staring and looking around. And he thought Simmons is looking for family members. And instead, he was trying to find Odell, and then they end up in a situation after the game. It's intriguing. And you're right. The frustration boiled over. But if this keeps up, and think about what would happen in the locker room after a Falcons loss and they go to 2-5. Oof. This is where Vrabel in the past has been able to keep the locker room on track, on path, on the road. And it's been the vets who have done that. Simmons has to be one of those guys, if not the guy. And it can't let it bleed over the way it did.
I mean, Jeffrey Simmons is a leader on this team. You got to keep your cool. Like, I get the frustration. Right. I understand it. You need to keep your cool, and you're going to hurt the football team if you don't. And he did on Sunday.
Yes, exactly. And so just as well as those that are not wanting to be there hurting the team, it's no different with Simmons in that particular situation.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Hutton, always appreciate you. Appreciate you for stopping by. We'll chat next week.
Always enjoy this. You guys have a great rest of the week.
All right. Thanks, Hutton. We'll react to what Hutton had to say there. Plus, I'm glad that we brought up the Jeffrey Simmons comments because there may be a new saga in that, and we'll break it down coming up next. Caroline Billy D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.